Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Freed Up Podcast. I'm so happy that you're here because today we've got an exciting topic, one that gets everyone up and moving out of their seats, and that is earning. Yep, I'm talking about green cash money, more into your pockets. Everyone's excited about that. But before we hop into it, let's go to a quick recap from our friend Brian.
A key thing in getting to a new place financially and spiritually is being a diligent earner. It is a good thing to earn money. It is a good thing to have more resources coming into the bank account. Now, all of us are in a different place with this. Some of us, this is the issue for why we're not getting ahead financially. We just can't figure out how to have the right inflow so that we can have the right outflow. Others of us, we focus on it so much, it's actually become our God. It's become the thing that defines whether or not we like ourselves or not. For others of us, we're so natural at becoming great earners. Money just seems to follow some people because we have certain habits and practices and attitudes. That's great. I hope that never stops. But if you're at that place, this probably isn't going to be the number one goal for you. We need to worry about our hearts. What is our heart as it relates to how much money I'm earning and how I can earn more? This is key. We never should stop wanting the resources to flow in.
All right, today I'm here with Joe Richards, an engineering manager by day, but a budget coach by night. Man, he knows some stuff about earning. So excited to have you with us, Joe. Glad you're here.
Thank you. I'm excited about this.
Yes, it's going to be a good time. You know what? First, it's good to acknowledge that we're here today to talk about earning more, which isn't typically something that you hear in a program about financial advice. Most of what we hear is about spend less, save more, and budget, you know, et cetera, all the restrictions. And all of those are good things. We've talked about those even on this podcast, but we also have to deal with the inflow side of the equation. Why do you think that we typically don't talk about earning more and we tend to focus more on that spend less, save, budget mindset?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a stigma that money and wanting money and the greed behind that can kind of turn it. But God made us to work. God created that. You know, people worked in the Garden of Eden. Christ was a carpenter. He made us. He wired us in a way that's unique to work and make money and use that for good. So I think it just gets mixed up a little bit with where is money bad? And reality is work is not good or bad. It's just something that God created for us. And it's really a blessing when it's done well.
So this idea of work, like you just said, it's not good or bad, but it seems to not just be about working harder or working more hours when we're talking about earning. What we're really talking about is becoming more of an effective and efficient earner, right? So what does an effective and efficient earner look like?
Yeah, that's great. We titled this diligent earner. So there's an intention to be set there. It's not a relentless amount of hours. It's not chasing after something. There's a diligence. There's a connection with God in this. And there's, what is your intention with going and earning and what you're doing with that in your life?
That's great. So there's a big picture strategy part of all this, and then there's some more practical day-to-day things. So let's start with the strategy. If you want to be that diligent or effective earner that you just talked about, how do I look at my job or my career differently?
Yeah, so I think you can start with, you know, there's a need to make money to cover the survival thing. So there's a time and a place, especially if you're like in lane one, where you just have to work to eat and live. But as you move into more, I think you want to find how God wired you. What is your skill set? What is your passion? And if you can line those up, then you can actually work. And it's not really work anymore. It's just something God created you to do. And then there's money that comes from that. So you kind of have to step, I think you have to be careful your purpose or your need around why you're working and what the inflow of money is doing for you.
Say a little bit more about that. What do you mean when you say your purpose or your need? Because, you know, we have listeners that are in that lane one, and this may be kind of a tough pill to swallow when I want to be and this is a great career, a rapper. I do, Joe, I'm telling you, want to be a rapper. maybe the Lord's not wired me totally to be a rapper, but it's also not where I'm going to earn income. Just saying that right now. But so that's my passion. How do I balance that? Can you say a little bit more about that purpose talk? Because that's a buzzword.
Yeah. So when I do budget coaching in the benevolence ministry, I'm usually coaching people that they don't have the luxury to work for purpose and passion and growth. They're just trying to feed their family, their kids, and they're hurting. And so, or they got fired or let go or some circumstance, not even based on their effort and their character led to that. And they're just trying to survive. So usually with when you're talking to somebody in that lane, you're just trying to help them. Their intention, their purpose is to feed their family and get by. So you have to have the right language and the right grace posture with where people are at. So it starts there in that lane. When you get to lane two, you can open the conversation up a little bit more because they're kind of running month to month a little bit. And you can be like, okay, do you want to edge more to earn more and bump over, or do you want to spend less? So you have some options and choices in lane two. But lane one, they're usually, there's a bondage, there's not freedom, they're kind of stuck. And so you have to fit the posture and the grace support is different for them. So I don't know if, yeah. So lane three, we can come back to lane three. That's a different type of conversation.
Right. Totally. It is. So what kinds of job choices should we look at differently? And I guess what I mean by that is when we're going into choosing a job or choosing a career and thinking about being a diligent earner, how does framing ourselves to be diligent earners make us look at our job choices differently?
Yeah. And I think there's different filters to kind of look at it and come to it. And we can kind of walk our way through that. So one is you can look at passion. You can look at what you're good at, or you can look at what you want to spend your money on and open and have a larger budget. And then you're driven by, do I want to earn the amount of money to get the lifestyle that I want, if you will. So that one's pretty clear. And we can talk about that later and work back on that. When you look at what you're good at and what you're passionate about, you have to kind of work through those and see where the opportunities are, what God's calling you into. And I think something that's important, especially for talking to the younger generation, just because you make a choice early in life doesn't mean you're stuck your whole life in that. So this is not a once and done forever choice. This is a journey. And when you talk to people, it's a messy journey. So there's not one easy, magical God's will path for you. This is a journey, a relationship. You go through and you learn as you go. So one thing I would say to people is get started. Like don't write it on a piece of paper and figure it all out. Like get some knowledge, get some clarity, go and test the waters and try some stuff out. A failure in life is just as great a learning experience as a success. So get started and try some things out.
That's great. So I want you to back up for just a minute. How do you look at someone's job and determine whether they're an effective earner or not? Like, what is the criteria for something like that?
So one thing we use in our workplace is we use what's called a what and a how review. So the what pieces, are you good at what you do? So can you get accomplished what you're being paid to do? The other piece we talk about is how you do your job. These are personal skills. Are you respectful in the workplace? Are you a leader? What's your character? What's your impact on people in the workplace? So when you think about an effective earner, you're performing well in the how and the what. And then hopefully, there's two questions I like to ask people. Do you know what you contribute in your job? And then does somebody recognize what you do? So those are the two key questions. When you go to work, I think the what doesn't matter. It's somebody saying, you contribute in this way and we're going to pay you for that. And then somebody says, I recognize you as a person and what you bring to the table. And you, well done, good and faithful servant. This is excellent work. I recognize that. So I think it's always good for people to hear. And then the money becomes just what you're paid out of that alignment, if you will.
You know, Joe, what you just said about that what and what that how, those are great. Assuming that I do know what and I do know how and that I am effective, how do I determine that I'm being effectively paid for what I bring to the table? That's not always intuitive. And honestly, just speaking plainly, I don't always know how to navigate that conversation or answer those questions.
Yeah. You touched on the performance review piece. That's how you're performing in your current role. But there are usually go to industry and look at industry markers, industry standards, and look at your job role and say, what is it? What is my skill set valued in the industry? And then you can look at where those standards are versus like your company. For a gig or a freelance, you could look at what are typical rates people are charging and look where you're at in that. But again, imbalance with what you're delivering versus what the value of that in the market space is. Within the job, you know, many companies, public corporations do grade levels, and there is standard comp ratios. And you could ask your employer, where am I on the comp ratio? Am I within the, you know, the median or the high or the low? And try to ask questions about how, what that looks like. And with companies, it's always good to ask about, is there a talent development process? Am I part of a talent development? Am I on that? How do I get on that track? What is my future here? What is my capacity for the next level? How are you developing me to reach that next level? So I may be high or low with where I'm at now, but I want to have conversations about how I get to that next level and how can you help me develop? I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get there. What does that look like? What are tangible steps I can take and go after to reach those levels?
Man, I love what you just said right there. There is something to looking at the stats, knowing about development. But you know what? I think it's probably different depending on the stage that you are in your career. So what is the difference for someone who's maybe be early? What signs should they be looking for? What questions should they be asking versus someone who's seasoned in their career?
Yeah, I think for both, you always want to have kind of a 3 to 5 year thought process and mindset. Like, where do I want to be in 3 years? What do I want to be in 5 years? So I think that's for everyone. Early in your career, you're trying to answer some self-discovery questions. Do I like what I'm doing? Am I good at it? But you should be having conversations with your employer, like what track am I on? Is there opportunity? Am I in a work, you know, I work for a company, we'll start there, that has opportunity that's going to develop me and open those doors up? Or is this a company where that's not okay there? The other thing for a young worker, when you look at a company, is the culture right? I didn't touch on this earlier. Is it a good culture? Is it a safe culture? Are the people around me good? And is it safe for me to work for the management here? And do my values align with their values? If your values are not aligning, it's a toxic workplace, don't stay. Too many people just inertia, just stay. It is bad for your soul. And it could be a good company and a good person and a bad fit. So just don't stay in that toxic environment. I know people that stay in that for 20 years and they are cynical, jaded, hurt. I would recommend you're better off go make less money somewhere else, because that's just not an environment if it's not a value fit. So for somebody young, just don't forget about the culture, the value, and the people. But ask the questions about the talent process. What are my opportunities down the road? And the annual merit review process is a great opportunity to ask those questions. So for somebody young, you should look, as much as the employer is looking at you, are you a good employee? You should be asking the same question. Is this a good company? And are you the right company for me?
You know what, Joe, before we go any further, I love what you just said there. There needs to be someone saying, you know, are you good? And then the recognition. Talk about what relationship with God, how does that impact that question that you're asking? Because, you know, some of our listeners may be following Jesus, some of them on the edge, some of them thinking about it, some of them not. But I think that there is a spiritual side to this practical version that you just gave.
Yeah, let me give you two verses that we like to reference. Colossians 3:23. Whatever you do, work it out with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for men. So when you work, you're doing it for the Lord. And we all want God to say to us, well done, good and faithful servant. You ran the race. I created you. You did what I wanted. I love you. I relate to you. I connect to you in that. And there's no shame, no guilt in that. Even if you're making millions of dollars or if you're making minimum wage, I don't think God puts a value statement on the amount of money. It's who you are as a person, and are you becoming who God made you? It's not how great is your work or how much money you're paid for it. You can be in somebody being paid minimum wage could be dialed in with God and super happy and just dialed in. And a millionaire could be miserable, you know, and just relentlessly chasing more money. Ephesians 2:10, For we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. So the question with God is, what workmanship am I? What did you create me to go do? And am I doing that well? And keep in mind, this is not just it's not one magic end of the rainbow find. This is many things over a journey and a season of life. It could be one thing early in your life and another thing later, retirement. This is a journey, a race, a marathon God's called us to.
Man, I love that. And that needs to be the emphasis, because some of what we talked about on this show so far, and maybe we'll get to talk about a little bit later, is how when you start to bring the spiritual aspect of earning and money, it's kind of countercultural. And that is absolutely countercultural. Cultural will have you believe that you decide what you're going to do at 18 and then you just do it forever. And there's no change. There's no opportunity to be shifted. And I think that brings up what some people, at least my age and maybe some people, you know, Joe, are wrestling with, which is, do I just go get a job as some employee of some company versus focusing on maybe freelancing or gigging or whatever that special thing got it, that passion project is what they're called now. Talk about what are the pros and the cons for someone who wants to maximize their earning potential but are grappling with that question.
Yeah, so there's a tactic side to this, the means to the end. So you may start out and do the gig thing, earn some early in life. And so later you have some money saved up to do the ministry or do the volunteering, or like I'm volunteering with, you know, this budget coaching realm. Well, I've worked hard to earn in the workplace. The other thing I would say is, I think in our Freed Up material, we talk about significance, safety, and happiness. So if you need to ask what I may be working for significance, and that's outstanding. But that back to that lane one person, they're just working to be safe. They're just doing a job to be safe in this world. So we can't, significance isn't even on the radar for them. So you have to just kind of keep that piece in mind. And then there is happiness. And the key there is not about the money in the end. The happiness is in the journey and the process. So I kind of bring it back to that, but there are tactics, and we can get into some of the tactics of, you know, should I do 1099 contract worker gig? Should I do my own thing? Should I do these other things? And we have to talk about risk and reward there a little bit. So we can go there a little bit if you
want. Let's go. So, yeah. Don't even wait. Let's do it.
Yeah. Risk reward. You think about it. So gig is cool because the reward is freedom, choice. I can do what I want. I'm not brick and mortar. I'm not stuck in this traditional world, my parents' world, whatever. But it comes with some risk. You know, I have to do quarterly taxes because that's not done for me. I may not have find work. I may have your inflow is up and down. It's sporadic. I have seasons of much money. I have seasons of no money. So there's risks, and you have to manage those risks. So I would say, think through a little bit of risk reward in those decision points. Come back to that passion piece, and then what's your purpose around what you're pursuing? But again, go try it. Do gigs. Do a gig for a year and see how it fits. You know, especially if you have some savings. Always make sure you're safe. So have some. I call it a safety net. If you got the safety net, go play, go test, go try it all out. But if you have no safety net, just be fully aware, eyes wide open, you're going in and some risk can come your way. And just be ready. As long as you can accept the failure and the scary, the grief, the hardships of that, if you're good with that, you know, by all means, go after that and see how it fits you.
We'll go back, Joe, and talk about some of those. You said you may have some tactics for some strategies. Don't gloss over. I want our listeners to get all of that.
Yeah. So as you're thinking about, so 1099 contract worker, the tactics there, I think, are you have to be willing to sell yourself. You have to do the marketing, find the work, do the networking, the relationship building. So if you have a craft, let's say you're a programmer, as an example, you have an excellent skill. You have to realize you have to do the networking and the marketing and brand yourself. And constantly do that. I have my brother's a missionary. So he has to do fundraising, right? He loves the mission field and they're doing translation work, but there's a necessary evil almost, or, you know, the admin side, have to go do all this fundraising. He does not like the fundraising, but it comes with the territory to do mission work. So, and if you want to work in the church space, you know, there's full-time employment, part-time, and you have to understand, you also have to worry about benefits. Another tactic is, where's my insurance? So how much is that going to cost me? To what if something happens to me and I can't work? There's not a company taking care of me. Now, a company, the tactics there are less risk, more coverage, benefits. I have IT support. So back to the tactic with a 1099 contract, my PC dies. My internet's not working. Well, that's 100% on you to figure that out, because you have to be everything, the HR person, the IT tech support. So just go in aware you have to do many more things, but you have the freedom to really do your craft and not. So back to the workplace, to contrast it, there's an HR department, but they have tons of policy. They have rules, they have restrictions, but they also support. You have IT tech support. So you have support, but you have to live, you have to deal with many other people, some political structures, management interaction, a boss that's telling you what to do and holding you accountable. Back to the gig worker. I know lots of people who do work on their own, and guess what? They have the worst boss, because guess who their boss is? Themselves. And they're like, I can't manage myself. I'm terrible at this. So just be aware you're your own boss, which is good. It can be bad. And then you're bound to the customer. So you have to do sales type stuff. You can't just, some people like to be told what to do and just do as they're asked. Well, that's nice in a company area. So that's some of the tactics to think through. Because some people don't think about that in a job and a gig until you kind of go through it. So those are some pieces just to think about how do I sit with that? What's my emotional response to that? And do I want those burdens? So it's more. Oh, go ahead. There's more than just the craft involved there.
This week we also spent some time talking about housing expenses as a barometer of how much money you need to make. You know, in short, saying that you kind of need to make 20%. And I want you to unpack that 20% rule just a little bit more, and maybe even go over it from the top from somebody who hasn't gotten there in the material just yet. There's a lot of factors at play.
Let me use an analogy first to give the big picture idea. So there's a strategic analogy called big rocks. So you start with a jar, and you want to put your big strategic things in first. Those are big rocks. So in this example, your housing expense is a big rock. Taxes are a big rock. Those two rocks in your jar are probably upwards of half your gross income, 50% out of the gates. And so the rest is sand. The rest is all their stuff you want to buy. But the big rocks are in there taking up a lot of space, and there's less space for everything else. So if you buy a big house and your gross income is not in line with that, then you're not going to be able to go out and do entertainment, vacations, all these other, I call them discretionary spends. So why is housing a big rock? Because taxes, of course, are. We have to pay the government. The house is a big rock because it's a longer term fixed expense. You're usually making it, again, back to this diligence, I buy a house or I sign up for rent. You just made a year-long commitment. You are stuck with that rock in your jar for probably a year, if not more. And so the 20% rule, and we can get into the mechanics of it, but essentially it's a larger, longer term fixed number that you want to go, you want to be aware of how it fits with what your gross income is. If that's out of balance, you're going to have a pretty tight jar.
You're saying that folks need to manage what their gross income is so that they don't buy too much house. Because one of the things is you and I know, Joe, everybody benefits when you get too big of an apartment or too big of a house. Everyone's jumping for joy, probably except you, like the person who sold it, the rental company, the insurance company is jazzed. IKEA's pumped because now you got to fill it up. You know, everyone's happy.
Yeah, and I will tell you that typically, depending on your credit score, the banks will offer you more money to buy more house than probably the 20% rule would allow for. So just because the bank's saying you can spend it, we're saying the diligent earner uses that as a barometer, given their gross income. There's two ways to pursue this. I can look at the house I want to get and reverse out of that the gross income I need, and then make sure I go find enough work, work two jobs, get the better job, get promoted, to get the house I want, or you look at what your current gross income is and you say, okay, I can fit this type of housing, which remember includes, we have all the utility expenses, the internet, the homeowners associations. There's some things when you buy, especially a house, maintenance. So maintenance will catch you off guard, and we can do a whole conversation on maintenance, especially my engineering background. I do a multi-million dollar budget at work for maintenance expenses, and we predict failures and all that stuff. So that's a little sidebar though. But there's more. When you buy a house, you think it's going to cost you just a mortgage, but then all of a sudden there's property taxes, insurance, utilities. It adds up fast. And that's why we say, look, keep it simple. We always like to keep it simple for people. So, but we also want to make you aware that there's some big numbers in that cost before you put yourself underwater and get in debt.
Man, love that. I love how practical that is. I think that our listeners are really going to benefit from hearing what you have to say about that. Anything to say to lane three concerning diligent earners before we get out of here? Because I know that those folks, you know, they're not hurting for money, but there's, like you said, God did create us for work. And so what does it look like for somebody who's living in lane three to be a diligent earner?
Yeah, I'm going to talk to this one a little bit. I want to touch on the traps that we talk about in the Freed Up material. So remember back to significance, safety, and happiness. And some of the traps we talk about comes off the money motivation quiz a little bit. And we talk about the traps of identity, security, and satisfaction. So if you're in lane three, you're safe. Your happiness is probably fine because you're able to use money to at least have a surface level of happiness, maybe not a deep-seated joy in Christ. That's what we really want for these lane three people. And how do you give money back? But on the earning side, just at lane, I would really challenge lane three people to ask these questions. Am I pursuing money in my work for identity? So am I what my job is? Is that my identity? And especially if your power was your motivation quiz result. And remember, identity is in Christ, right? Not in our job role and our amount of money we make. But lane three gets deceived by this and they start chasing that. And then they go to work for the ego, for the affirmation, for something, the relational needs are being met by their identity in the workplace, and they're getting filled by that. Security is not a trap, and people pursue money as their level of security. And God teaches us nothing is certain in life. So you have to be careful if security was your score, that you're not using money for that sense of emotional security and relying on that. And then the third one is satisfaction. And then you're pursuing, you know, whether it's the job or the money, just to pay for things that make you feel good, right? Because that's fleeting as well. And freedom, you know, in there. So with lane three, you have some luxury to say, what is my passion? And you can try some different things out, but you have to be willing to risk some things and try different pursuits. And then again, if you want to move into ministry or give back, you may have to save up and prepare for that. So maybe you want to retire early. Then you, in lane three, you can start thinking about retirement things, you know, and there's a broader horizon and perspective. But I think what we want to teach people is, how can you give back? How can you find? So first of all, find yourself in God. And then second, give back out of that through humility and other things, because you have that freedom. Like, give that away and help others in this journey and give back.
I think for everyone who's listening today, this is definitely going to be able to help people walk away and start to do some deep thinking about what it means to earn diligently in their life. You know what, everyone? Next week, we're going to be talking about the thing that we all do, no matter where we are on this journey of finance, and that is spending. No matter where we are in our freed up journey, we all spend. And so I know that you're not going to want to miss that. No matter how much or how little, I know that you can relate to that, because you probably spent something today or yesterday or last week, or you're probably on your way right now to spend something. It is stressful to think about spending, but it does not have to be. And I'm excited to get to chat with some new friends next week. Joe, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a rich, rich experience. So glad to have you with us. We'll see you next time, everyone.